Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, review for the midterm exam. I will spend some time looking at the markets. As I said, I have a guest speaker coming in for a few minutes to speak to you about the markets, so it's relevant to the content of the course and even to the exam, maybe. And then I will go into a full-blown review. I'll tell you what I want you to know. You are writing down what I tell you, and then that becomes your study guide for prep for the midterm exam. Once I'm finished with what I think you should know, I open it up for you to ask me questions about the exam, and then when we're finished with that, it's all over for the day. So it's got a couple of different moving parts in it, this day has for us. But first, a look at the markets. And as you can see, the Dow is the only one that was down just a little bit. The rest of the market was pretty bullish today. We had the S&P 500 is pulled up, nothing really spectacular, 0.36%. And then the Russell is actually, or rather Russell, the NASDAQ is up about 0.75%. So it's definitely more on the bull side than the bear side today, which is always a good sign. On the other side of the world, however, we had the oddly enough, the Nikkei on the Tokyo Exchange has been in a sour mood lately, and it had a darn good day, bull day. But then the one that has been up for quite a bit lately, the Hang Seng, China, is down, which it's having a crabby day. It was apparently something that pushed it down at the beginning of the trading day, but then it didn't go any lower after that initial push down, as you can see from the spark chart. Going over to Europe, and you can see that it had a bear day today. Europe did. It went down, and then it came back up, and then it slipped back down again. Same pattern, a little very similar, was the CAC 40 on the Paris Exchange. But the FTSE, London is just having a hard time. There's a lot of talk about a mild recession coming in Great Britain. And so you're not seeing much in the way of up or down, just sort of barely moving along, down a little tiny bit for the day, 0.13%. Coming down here, we got all kinds of excitement happening. Crude continues to be low, and if you noticed, as I had said, retail gas prices are now slipping. I've saw several stations today in this area below $3 a gallon, and we'll probably see a little more easing down maybe to 289, maybe, within the next couple of weeks. But it's just a very weak market because the supply of oil is so huge right now that the price just can't find any running room. However, as you can see, gold, as I had said, if it crosses, it wants to cross $4,000 an ounce. That's a very bad sign if it does. Today, it's just about, I would say about $15, $16 away from that rather troubling threshold. And it's just a warning sign. You saw the terrible state of the inverted yield curve. These are longer term, 6 to 12 months kind of activity. The bull market is just going to keep rolling along, as our guest speaker is going to tell you here in just a few minutes. As you can see, if you look at the S&P 500, looking at it over the last year, maybe, well, let's look at it over the last 6 months. It just won't quit going up, despite all of the indicators that there is a terrible problem under the surface boiling. The gold is warning us fiercely that there is something really troubling. The yield curve is saying something really troubling. Traders don't work that way. They work on a day-to-day, minute-to-minute basis. If it looks good right away out there in the future, we're going to buy. And that's what you're seeing is the distinction between the short-term market activity and the longer-term analytics that are warning us of something very different from the bull market itself is warning us. But the speaker will talk to you a little more about that over the coming couple of in the next few minutes here. But working our way back here, let me go back one quick. Looking at that sector map, and as I said, I'm going to look more at the sector map from here on out. You can see that the technology sector just won't quit being bullish, because there are so many new products coming out, so much innovation, so much wealth accumulation in that sector, that the green is going to just be there. Other sectors are coming and going. Healthcare is troubling, because there are these indicators from looking at the actual details. We've got 13 million Americans no longer have health insurance, and so they are not going to be going to hospitals, doctors, medicals, getting medical services. So that's going to take that money out of the healthcare system. More will happen as people's health insurance premiums go skyrocketing, which it will be doing over the next year, and that will deter some of them from getting health insurance through their employers, and so that will draw money out of the healthcare system. That's why you see a persistence of bearish sentiment in the healthcare system. We know that that is a system that is going to have a lot of money drained out of it from consumers using less of it over the next year or two or three. So that explains the difference. Technologies of all kinds, artificial intelligence, cloud computing systems, Internet of Things, that's all bullish, and it will remain that way for the foreseeable future. Even in an ugly downturn, you may still see the technology sector in the green on more days than not. And that's just the way it is. Before I go on here, let me, I did say I had a guest speaker, and I want to make sure I give the speaker a chance to talk to you here for a few minutes. And just to show how to see. Just sneak up behind me and tap me on the shoulder. Okay. Hi, I'm a bear, and I want to tell you about the bear market. There is talk that there are bulls, and I'm a bull. I was just kidding you there, because bears really don't exist. Never have, never will. Now, as you can see from that chart up there, the bull market is permanent. It is going to keep going forever, and you should never listen to anyone who says that I'm a bear and there are bear markets coming. They aren't coming. There never will be a bear market, because the bull market is forever. Trust me when I tell you, and this is no bull, get it? It's a bear! No, holy milkshake, get away from me! Get away from me! No, leave me alone! No! Review for the midterm exam. They will have multiple choice, true and false, matching, fill in the blank, and a set of quantitative questions. And I'm going to work my way through it, kind of back and forth, but I am looking at the exam right now, so this is probably going to be a pretty authoritative, you should know. So you're filling out your study guide point by point, and then you go back through over the next couple of days and just make sure that you've got it cold down to the stone on these. You have a 4x6 note card front and back that you're allowed. And also you can print out, now as far as print, make sure you print it out, not on your computer, that financial analysis formulas sheet. I'm not going to ask you to calculate any ratios. That's not just not what I do. What we do in finance, we have computers do that. We have accountants do that kind of stuff. They love themselves numbers. So, but it would be worth it for you to have that. Just if I ask a question, okay, which one of these ratios is larger? And you could just sort of look at the two formulas and say, oh, I see, numerator of this one and the denominator of this one. Just looking at it from that perspective, it's sort of like a comfort sheet for you to have for it. Obviously, for the exam, there are the note card, your computer. You can also have a calculator if you wish, a physical calculator for the exam as well. But as far as mobile phones, anything else, that is off limits. Obviously not going anywhere but on the exam. And I do caution you, there are five ChatGPT traps on this exam. Questions that I know the ChatGPTs would get wrong, so we'll be tracking if there's a consistent pattern with someone getting those questions wrong on the exam. As far as the structure, as far as the number of questions, there are about 40 to 44, but remember there's a matching section, so that counts as one, but there are actually multiple parts to it. I have a habit of copying and from quizzes and pasting answers, pasting those questions into the midterm. So it's worth your while to go back and look at those quizzes. All of them have the correct answers now in them. So that is a great quick resource for knowing the kinds of questions that I ask. The quantitative questions. That I'm not plowing new territory. You've seen it on a couple of quizzes. The present value of an annuity, present value of a lump sum, future value of an annuity, future value of a lump sum, loan payment. You've seen them. Generally speaking, by the time of the midterm, you've got those down, and that's some good points for you that are not hard to get. Now, as far as other quantitative questions, I will have a holding period return question. You can do it by hand, but you also have that Excel spreadsheet that can do it for you as well. The exam will have the downloads key for downloading the present and future values, Excel worksheet, spreadsheet, and also the holding period return spreadsheet. Those will be the only ones you need for the exam. Also, there will be one finding the yield on a one-year treasury bill. That was that problem. I gave price, face value, find the amount of interest, divide that by the price you paid, and then times 100. That'll give you your yield to maturity on a one-year T-bill. You'll have one of those. And that would be the extent of the numbers questions, I think. And those are pretty easy points at this. Now that you've gotten those routines down with the Excel sheets and with calculation, you shouldn't have much problem with those. You will have a screen, and the screens that I created for the random question pool are good companies, and the answers are pretty clear. You know, is it undervalued or overvalued? Is it risky, not risky? And also make sure that you know what bid and ask. If I say you bought a share of this stock, what would you pay? You sold a share of this stock, what would you get? Make sure you pay attention to the bid and ask. Know what those are, which one you use. And that would be the extent of the screens question for the midterm exam. Pretty straightforward. I do it every day for you on the board here. Those kinds of problems. Other questions that I could, let me go here. First of all, know your terminology. Really critical. In the matching, especially, I'll give you a description. You match it to the right term or word. Other terminology questions I could give you. Make sure you know things like financial intermediation, liquidity, and those kinds of questions. What's the difference between compounding and discounting and that kind of thing? Capital markets versus money markets. Spot versus forward, primary versus secondary. Just meat and potatoes kinds of things that we've gone through. You've been quizzed on them. Just make sure that you know those. If you are kind of glitching, you can't remember one or several, obviously that's where your note card comes in. I don't want you losing points just because you have a mental freeze up at some point on something. Now, getting down to the business, and I'm looking right at it as I tell you these, so this is gospel. I actually once forgot, didn't realize I had it on the wrong screen and the exam was up there on the overhead. Man, you should have seen people writing furiously. That's why I kind of just keep checking to make sure it doesn't go over there. Okay, starting from basics, in the early part of the semester, what's the difference between accounting and finance? Finance is not accounting. It's not some part of accounting. It's completely different. And we consider differences. What constitutes a cost, a recognizable cost in accounting, versus what we consider to be cost in finance? And for heaven's sake, there will be a few fill-in-the-blank. Know how to spell opportunity cost. Anyway, other things from early in the course. The idea of the business. There are different kind organizational structures for business. Sole proprietorship, partnership, corporation. What distinguishes one from another? Why are corporations so different from other business organizational forms? Make sure you know that. In that context, what do I mean by stock? What do I mean by bonds? What differentiates one from the other? What level of claim? On with that, I'm not asking that on the exam, so I'm not worried about it. As far as bonds are concerned, now, understand, Chapter 7, there's a math part to it. I'm not going to ask anything about that. The first part of it, where I'm giving you definitions, you know, indenture agreement, callable or convertible bonds, stuff like that, mortgage versus debenture, that's fair game, but nothing mathematical. I showed you the spreadsheets last Wednesday, but that's just to warn you of things to come. But when I'm talking about debt, what's the distinction when I say bill, note, bond? What does that mean? I think I did it on one quiz. I'll describe a lending transaction. And then I'll say, okay, which one of these was happened? There was a note, was it a bill, was it a bond? Who was the issuer? Who was the investor? So make sure you know that the lender is the investor, the buyer of the security, the purchaser. And that the borrower is the seller of the security, the writer of the security. Make sure that you know that. I did that on a question. I gave you a little scenario, and I said, which of these is correct for the description of the technical description of what happened? While I'm thinking about it, I do have a tendency to ask one or two questions concerning examples that I've done in class that I was using to emphasize some concept, some term. And it wouldn't be a deep question. It would be, okay, when I was discussing this, what was the company that was involved? Or what was the country that was referenced? That is deeper learning, and it also requires that you have attended the class or at least listened to the podcast if you missed the class. So there would be one or two of those where I'm just having you show me that you actually were attenuating knowledge as I was pushing it at you. I can't emphasize enough knowing the terminology. Just get a list down. Create a list of terms that I brought in. And that, like I said, financial intermediation, liquidity, things like what's the relationship between a bond yield and a bond price? What's the relationship between risk and return? What do I mean by a mortgage as opposed to a debenture? What is convertibility? What do I mean by a forward price? What do I mean by capital structure? I'm trying to telegraph my punches here. I'm not talking abstractly. I'm looking at it while I talk. I'm looking at the exam as I'm talking to you. Now, I did bring up some things like Form 10K, Form 10Q, Form 8K. Make sure you know what you can get out of those different forms. Why they're relevant, why they're useful to us. Interest rates. Know the structure of an interest rate. There are two big chunks, the risk-free rate and the risk premium. What are the mechanical parts in there, in the risk-free rate? What are the pieces inside of the risk premium? If I describe a loan to you, a type of loan, what pieces in the risk premium are big, which are small? Like, for example, if I said a 1-year treasury bill, right off the bat there's no default premium, or at least hardly any. There's no illiquidity premium because you can trade it like trade T-bills like cash. There's not really even a maturity premium because it's only a year long. Know how the discount rate or the compounding rate. affects respectively a present value or a future value. In other words, what happens when, if you're finding a present value and you change the interest rate to make it higher? What does that do to a present value? If you're finding a future value and you change the interest rate, the compounding rate, you make it higher, what does that do to a future value? Before I forget it, I have three levels of questions. Level one are easy. Level two, you have to think for a little bit. Level three are more difficult. And I don't put many level threes on there. You could probably still get an A if you missed all the level threes. I consider those Excel all your arithmetic, that's level two. It used to be a level three, but now with Excel, it's just level two. But as you're going along, I would strongly recommend that if you hit something that looks like you're going to have to think a lot about it, walk around it. You'll have time to come back and deal with it. But don't let thinking about a hard problem grind away your time. You have about a minute and a half per problem. The more you get done in 10, 20 seconds, the more time you'll have to go back and think about those more difficult problems. Just, this isn't advice just for me, but this is true of any exam, but I'm just reminding you, work smart through my exam. I make it so that there are roadblocks on your path. Just go around them, and then you can come back later and deal with those. Moving back. As far as financial institutions go, I probably won't beat you up much, except for commercial banks and investment banks. I mean, there were a lot of other ones I did in there, mutual funds and ETFs and pension funds and hedge funds and private equity funds. I won't hit you too hard over the head with those. Generally, I kind of hold that off until I get you to a class like, 340, something like that, or rather, 241. I don't beat it up, but it is important you know about commercial banks, investment banks, and all that kind of stuff, and understand what it means to underwrite an offering of stock. I usually ask something about telling the difference between an actual exchange and just an index on an exchange. I did that on one of your quizzes. Like I said, those quizzes are an excellent resource for getting the some actual questions that will be on the midterm, and also getting the idea of the kinds of questions that I ask on the midterm. Go back to the first couple of lectures. I want to emphasize this. That was where I was laying out prior claim versus residual claim, difference between stockholders, bondholders, the very basic theory of capitalism and how it benefits us through static efficiencies and dynamic efficiencies. That first lecture, I don't expect that at that time you were attenuating knowledge very well. But as time went on, you kind of got more of the idea of what was going on in those early lectures. Let me have a quick look back through here. Well, shoot. I suppose I could just put this exam up there on the overhead for you. I won't do that. Again, I can't emphasize enough. A lot of terminology has been put into you by the end of this course And I thank our teaching assistant for actually consolidating it. There are over 300 terms that are brought to you. Some are words that you know, but they have specialized meanings. Some are new terms that have come about in this class, like saying, I go long 100 shares. I go long around lot. That is specialized terminology. Go long means you buy. A round lot is 100 shares. Those kinds of words and terms built up by this time in the course, you've probably had about 100 or so. So as you're going through your notes, pull those words out and put them on a separate piece of paper to make sure that you can go through those definitions. The ones that are hard for you to remember, get on your note card. That's one of the main reasons for the note card. It gives you a safety net under you. Moving back into the main body of this, let me get this off here. Something I'm thinking that I'm forgetting here to cover for you. There was some terminology in when we were doing time value of money, like with annuities. There are ordinary annuities and annuities due, and there were level annuities versus non-level annuities. Then there's this oddball, the non-periodic annuities, which we don't deal with much. We certainly don't do it in this class. We try to avoid it in any place. But also perpetuities, those kinds of terms, just sort of the background terminology that is used in time value of money kinds of problems. And it looks like I'm just kind of talking abstractly, but I guarantee you, especially if I put it on the board, it's definitely going to be on your, it's definitely fair game for the exam. As far as financial statements go, I don't probe deeply into them, certainly not on this test, but it wouldn't hurt for you to know what I mean by such terms as gross profit, operating profit. What financial statement would you find, for example, current assets on? Or something like that. Where would you find investment? Capital investments, but I would not beat you up with that. That's accounting, and it's not really all that important in finance anyway, except to get some numbers that we have to fix. So take that for what it's worth. And again, as I said, I don't expect you to calculate ratios, but I do expect you to be able to look at ratios and tell something about what it's saying to us. What do we mean by the net margin? There's sometimes a ratio, and it goes up, that's good, it goes down, it's bad. In fact, there's one ratio you should know that if it goes below a certain number, that is a very bad sign. Make sure you know what that is. Which one is larger? You know, current ratio or cash ratio, operating margin or gross margin. Those kinds of things. Still something I'm missing here. Again, basics. Where would you? What kind of company is all at risk? The owners are all at risk. What kind of company are the owners not all at risk. Really basic things. Two kinds of companies are actually quite similar. And then the other type of company is quite different. Make sure you know that distinction. Again, just basics in the early lectures of the semester, where I was laying out the framework in which I could then put in the machinery that you have now. Okay, now it's your turn. Ask me questions. Yes?
Is it on the computer or
Canvas? No, it's in Canvas. Now, I should mention that make sure you stay in Canvas for the whole exam. Don't go wandering anywhere else. That's academic misconduct. Especially don't go trying to find a ChatGPT. And, of course, the back wall, you can't sit on the back wall, and your mobile phones are stowed away during the exam. But, yeah, it's in Canvas. And, by the way, obviously, you'll know right away what your score is. But then I have to go back and make sure Canvas didn't glitch out on something. But you'll see right away how you did on it. What else do you have for me? Now, we have office hours tomorrow. Our teaching assistant does, and I have office hours on Wednesday morning. If you have any last minute questions, any other questions you have right now? Yeah. Just look on the syllabus for the office hours. Mine are on the front page. Our teaching assistant, hers are in the teaching assistant section of the syllabus. Yeah. isu-prof.com. isu-prof.com. You can also go over to Apple iTunes and type Illinois State Collegiate Compendium. Either way, you'll find the same ones. Okay, if that's all you have for me, yeah.
Are you taking like any questions?
Well, they'll be the same exact format, but they'll just be different numbers.
All right, thank you.
That's all I have for you. I thank you.